Are all the changes in the world wearing you out? Because who doesn't know we're going through extraordinary change, and with it comes resistance and fear. How do you deal with it? How do you make the change work for you instead of against you? You need this answer because the experts clearly don't have it. How do you access your own inner guidance and wisdom to deal with local, national, global changes? Join me, Carol Gold, for the next hour. Get these answers and more. Carol Gold, you're listening to WNJC 1360 AM, and this is An Hour of Gold. Good morning. I have so much I want to talk to you about this morning. Remember, you can call in at 856-227-1360 here at An Hour of Gold to share your thoughts on today's subjects. And let me just give you a heads up, because I am really psyched about today. Today, I'm going to cover two topics. One is the movie Social Network, and a whole bunch of issues that relate to that movie and the making of that movie and the lawsuits around that movie. And the second issue that I'm going to cover is the president's current political standing in the polls, as well as congressional standing in the polls. And, of course, although both stories are current events, you know what we do here at An Hour of Gold, and that is find the higher meaning, find some purpose in the story, and understand how we can look at even the worst news on any given moment and find inspiration, motivation, and optimism in those stories. That's the essence of An Hour of Gold. That's what we do. Your comments and thoughts are always welcome. 856-227-1360. You can listen here on the radio, of course, at WNJC 1360, or live on the web at carol.gold.com. My website, where you'll also find available my recently released Lightworkers Handbook, as well as motivational and inspirational CDs and DVDs to get you through your day. Okay. So let's talk about Social Network. The reason that the movie and the whole issue of Facebook has come up for me strongly in the last few days, and for any of you who do check out my website regularly, you'll see that I've written two consecutive blogs in the last 2 days on Social Network, and actually I'm about to write a third today. It's the first time I have ever written a blog 3 days in a row that revolved around the same subject matter, but there's actually so much to talk about in regard to Social Network and its making, its filming, its creation, and as I said, its lawsuit. So let's start with the movie. This past weekend, my daughter rented Social Network, and I watched it with her. And prior to watching the movie, I knew very little about Mark Zuckerberg, the young man who created Facebook. And what I knew was pretty much limited to little bits and pieces that I had learned from the media. And my total conception of the story of Facebook was that there was this very smart college student who was a technological whiz who put together Facebook, this platform which has taken off globally. And really, in a nutshell, that's kind of what I knew. Well, I was shocked. Imagine my shock. If you haven't seen the movie, perhaps today's discussion won't be as meaningful, but if you have seen it, it certainly will. My shock, and actually the many levels on which I was disturbed by the movie, was really a surprise to me. And I'm going to talk about several of them, but the one that just knocked me over was the fact that Mark Zuckerberg stole the idea from two college classmates. And it isn't me determining that he stole it. It's the fact that he settled for $65 million with the two brothers from whom he got the idea. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, let me just give you a little background of what I'm talking about. Mark Zuckerberg is a technological whiz. He was at Harvard. Two young men who were in a fraternity or a private club, you had to be asked to join, came to him because he had created some program within Harvard's own networking system that caught their attention. So they had this great idea, these two brothers, and twins as a matter of fact. They came to Zuckerberg and they asked him if he would take the idea and expand it and basically turn it into a viable internet platform for them. And he took the idea all right. And he led them to believe he was working on their idea. All the while, he had expanded it and turned it into something more than what they envisioned. But basically, he was working off of their premise and their basic idea. Now, I'm not a computer techie, so when I tell you that technically, he kept saying he didn't use their codes, I'm sure that has a particular meaning in the world of technology, that he did not use their codes, but he used enough of what they gave him. I'm sure writing another code to affect the same end is simple enough for someone who is technological savvy. So that's in essence what he did. Now, to me, that's theft, or it's at least appropriation of property, and it's conversion of someone's property to your own use, in fact. But and a little bit of the lawyer in me is talking around all that, so I won't get too technical. But let me say that my daughter, in watching the movie, when we got to this point where clearly he had taken their idea and run with it, she turned to me and she said, "Well, Mom, I don't think he did anything wrong." And I said, "Really?" And she said, "Well, yeah, he did his own thing. He made Facebook. That isn't what they were going to make." And I said, "Well, let me ask you a question," because my daughter has an interest in fashion and in running her own fashion design house someday, hopefully. So I said to her, "Let me ask you a question. If someday you design a dress and another fashion designer designs the same dress, identical, but larger, in a bigger size, you think you'll be upset? Did they steal your dress?" And she said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, then tell me how what Mark Zuckerberg did was different. He took what they created, or what they had in mind to create. They gave him the basics and he enlarged it. To me, that's taking their idea, their property, and turning it into your own without compensation." By the way, they had no compensation. So they sued, and that's a later conversation in this show, that they sued and the outcome of that suit. But for the moment, let's just stick with Mark Zuckerberg and what he did. I think if you take away the rest of his character in the movie, and that's also a subject for later discussion on this show, his character in the movie, his actual character, the quality of his values and his ethics. If you take that away, and we just look at what he did. We just look at him taking someone else's business idea, running with it, not caring and not compensating them. To me, it is an example of the worst of what's happened in this country around the need to be rich and famous. The need to be rich and famous is so pervasive in our country. And we give that message over and over and over again to young people. That it's no wonder that we are imbued and led by politicians who have no ethics. They are not the problem. We are. What we do at the personal and local level is what gets magnified at the national level and beyond. So it's always the microcosm. It starts at the smallest. It's not top down. It's bottom up in the very literal sense. You know, there's this expression, you get the leaders that you deserve. And in a way, that's what we have. Because most people don't think there's anything wrong with what Mark Zuckerberg did. And that's because they're too busy idolizing and being in awe of and riding the crest of that kind of in his case, longer than 15 minutes of fame. But nonetheless, that instant stardom, which, by the way, only in America is possible, and that's the upside. The upside is we live in a nation where it's still possible to do remarkable things overnight. But the important part is that you not do them on the backs and cripple someone else on the way. It's important that if you get where you get, you do it with ethics, you do it with values, you do it with a conscience. You don't do it at any price, because when the means justifies the ends, you're no longer living in a free republic. When the means justifies the ends, ultimately you're going to find yourself living with anarchy or fascism. Because it's caring about the values, it's caring about the quality of what you do, it's caring about the integrity of what you do, and it's caring about your neighbor that allows us to live the quality of life we have been able to live in this country for the last 200 years, which is unique to the history of the world. So before I go on, let me just take a moment and tell you about my favorite, my absolute favorite Italian restaurant, Stefano's in Mount Laurel. Paola Balsamo has been there for 26 years, which is virtually impossible to believe because she looks 26. But putting that aside, she's got three children that she has raised while operating that restaurant. And that restaurant serves you authentic Italian recipes that come from Paolo's mother in Italy. This is the real thing. The atmosphere is warm and friendly. The prices are incredibly reasonable. The portions are really generous. And into every authentic recipe gets added a secret ingredient, which is love, because that's what Paolo brings to her restaurant. So if you haven't stopped by already, please stop by and enjoy a wonderful Italian meal at Stefano's in Mount Laurel. And by the way, mention An Hour of Gold and you'll receive 10% off the total cost of your bill. So really enjoy that. Okay, so let's get back to Social Network. I just talked a little bit, and by the way, if you've seen the movie, have any comments or just have any thoughts about ethics in business, please call 856-227-1360 here at WNJC 1360 AM. And remember, you can listen live as you are right now, or if you need to be by your computer instead, carolwithanegold.com. Just click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and you'll be right here with me now. We're talking about Mark Zuckerberg, the founder, although not the originator, of Facebook, and the ethical issues and questions that relate to finding a business, building a business, succeeding in a business, and what exactly do we owe those people along the way who support us in a variety of ways. And by the way, this isn't really just about business. It's about the people who support us along the way in life. Is it okay to forget people? You know, one of my favorite books is Atlas Shrugged. And I love that book by Ayn Rand. And I love it because it's a story about ethics. It's a story about being the best we can be. It's a story about America, and it's a story that's so ahead of its time because I believe Atlas Shrugged was written in the, hope I don't make a mistake here. I think it was written in the 50s, and it is still a classic. It has now been resurrected because she was so prescient. She so knew what was coming down the road that She foresaw where we are right now, the challenges we face right now. And I love that book, and I read it every decade. I read it every decade, and it's like 900 pages, but I reread it every decade because I want to see where we are and where she was in relationship to how this country has unfolded. Well, I made a big mistake this year. Right before I reread Atlas Shrugged, a biography of Ayn Rand came out. And it was an outstanding book. But the problem was, I found out that Ayn Rand didn't live the life she wrote about, which isn't unusual. It's not unusual. It's not unusual that when you meet someone who's very good at what they do, they have a tough time living it. Because walking the talk is the hardest part. And so many of us espouse great ideas, but if you get too close, you find out we're not so We're not the idol, or we're not the hero, or we're not the perfect person that you envision from a distance. And it happened with Ayn Rand. What I found out that was most disturbing about her was that she was an immigrant who came from Russia, which is why she had such an understanding of the importance of capitalism and a free economy, as opposed to what she had come out of in Russia. And as an immigrant, she obviously needed a lot of help. She needed help with English. She needed help with understanding culture here. She needed help with making a mark for herself. And a lot of people helped Ayn Rand along the way. And what she did was she summarily dismissed them. She had a tendency to dismiss everyone who ever helped her and only talk as if she was a self-made woman that had no help from anyone. And I found it so disconcerting and disappointing that it colored my reading of Atlas Shrugged. And so while I did read it again this decade, I just read it again this year, I couldn't read it with the innocence and the sort of the awe that I had had for the brain that could write that book, because now I knew a little too much about the person. After I watched Social Network over the weekend, I fact-checked the movie. And so I wanted to be sure that the opinion I was forming about Mark Zuckerberg, after all, a very real, very human young man, I wanted to find out if it was correct, that he was, in fact, as despicable as he was portrayed in the movie. And he was, because he was amoral, asocial, and criminal in the movie. I mean, that's him in a nutshell. He didn't have a redeeming feature in the movie. There was nothing to like about the guy, from his first girlfriend, who he humiliated on the internet, all the way up to his theft of Facebook, of the underpinnings for Facebook. He didn't have a redeeming feature. He seemed to be a boy without a conscience. So I fact-checked it, and it turned out that a lot of the movie is an exaggeration, and some of it probably completely fictionalized. The basic premise remains the same. He did take the idea of Facebook from classmates, and he did turn it into his own. He was sued by them, and he did pay $65 million in settlement to them. And he also had to make restitution and compensation to some other people who were involved in the founding of it, not least of all the young man who financed it early, who wound up getting cut out of the deal, but ultimately wound up back with, I think, 34% of the company after the resolution of the lawsuit, or a little less. But he wound up almost whole again, if not whole, as opposed to how he had been diminished by Zuckerberg when Zuckerberg later contracted with the founder of Napster, who is a whole other story of lack of ethics, drug use, and complete wasted space, I guess, is the best way to say it. So my point is, when I fact-checked it, I now had a second irritation about the movie, and that was the filmmakers, the producers, the director, Aaron Sorkin, who wrote the screenplay, David Fletcher, or Fetcher, I believe his name is, who wrote the book on which the movie was based, and all of the people who financed the movie, including the actor Kevin Spacey. He was one of, I think, six or seven who financed the movie. So what was my irritation? What was my irritation with the filmmakers? I mean, you know, I'm here to find the highest good in every story. Why was I annoyed at the filmmakers? Well, here's why I was annoyed. All we do all day is listen to bad news. That's what we get all day long. And all we hear about are the worst in people, because it sells. They, the media, the people who run media, the people who are in media, still believe that if it bleeds, it leads. They still believe that you want to hear the worst of what humanity is capable of, that you're titillated by it, you're exhilarated by it, you're turned on by it, and it makes you feel better. Because when you hear about somebody else's tragedy, when you hear about how poor the people in India are starving, or wherever it is in the world that there's crisis, it makes you feel better about yourself. That's what they still think of us. I don't think that's who you are. It's not who I am. It's why this show doesn't take that approach. It's why my whole perspective, whether it's this show or my book, The Lightworker's Handbook, A Spiritual Guide to Eliminating Fear, which, by the way, you can buy on my website or at Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, it's why everything I do is the antithesis of what happens in the news. Because while I'll tell you about Mark Zuckerberg's lack of ethics, and I'll tell you why the filmmakers disturb me, and more so why the two brothers, the Winklevosses, the two boys from Harvard that Mark Zuckerberg, it's like tongue twisters, Zuckerberg, Winklevoss, it's amazing I can even do this. I should try to do like 10 of them in a row, right, and see how ridiculous it all comes out. If after I do all that and I tell you the reality of those stories, I'm going to spend a good amount of time on this show telling you what's really positive about all that and what we can take away from it, what the takeaway is so that we become better people, so that we live better lives, so that we don't perpetuate the myth that if it bleeds, it leads. Because we're walking into a new world, you see. And if we continue to act and think as if it bleeds, it leads, we're headed into a world that is no different than our past. And the definition of insanity is doing the same thing in the same way and expecting a different result. I don't think we're insane. I think we've been unconscious. But that's very different than being insane, okay? Insane, you can't tell reality from fiction, and insane says you'll do things that are intentionally harmful to yourself or another because you enjoy it. On some level, it makes you feel good. Unconscious means you do those things because you don't know any better, which is why Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." He meant they were unconscious. He didn't mean they were deliberately evil. When you know not what you do, you are unconscious. When you wake up and you're conscious, a very interesting thing happens. You become personally responsible. And when you're unconscious, you're not. Any excuse works when you're unconscious. It's always someone else's fault when you're unconscious. When you're conscious, it's never anyone's fault. When you're conscious, it's everyone's responsibility. And there's a difference, okay? Don't be guilty, be responsible. Don't think you're at fault, be responsible. Don't think you're bad, be responsible. That's what it's all about. And so I don't believe that the future holds that if it bleeds, it leads. I think the future holds that we will be stimulated and excited and energized by the best of what we're capable of. So that's why this show exists. It exists to broadcast and mirror the best of what we're all capable of. Okay, so let's go back for a moment to the filmmakers, where I left off. Why do they bother me? Well, they bother me because Mark Zuckerberg was bad enough in real life, as is. He didn't need to be turned into anything uglier than he already was. He humiliated his girlfriend in real life because she broke up with him. He went on the internet and he trashed her. He sold out his friends. He stole the idea for Facebook. He linked up with the loser and the user from Napster, and he allowed himself to be a puppet by this guy who was all about manipulating others and getting his 15 minutes of fame and his week's supply of cocaine. And then he didn't want to pay the people from whom he got the idea, and he tried to cheat his partner out of his share. Now, I'm sorry, but wasn't that a bad enough movie to make? Did they actually need to turn him into someone who was more amoral, more asocial? And that's what they did. They made Mark Zuckerberg, who I, in fact-checking, felt that he was not the extreme character that was portrayed in the movie. And the fact check verified that even the character of the guy from Napster, and I can't think of his name, Sean something or other, even he was not quite as bad. He wasn't arrested for cocaine use in real life as he was in the movie. He was picked up, but he was never charged. It bothered me that they had to take that movie and make it the worst they could make it, ethically, morally, conscience-wise, because if it bleeds, it leads. They wanted to do well at the box office. They wanted to do well on DVD, on rental, and they didn't think the story was exciting enough the way it was. I think the story's very exciting the way it is. I think the story is perfect the way it is, because the truth is always the best teacher. And Mark Zuckerberg, I watched him recently on an interview. He seems like he's got a little more presence, a little more focus, a little more maturity, and a little more conscience, hopefully, than he had when he initiated Facebook. So wouldn't that be a great story, that he made some mistakes and he corrected them? He made some mistakes and he stepped up to the plate. He's got more of a conscience. He donated $1 billion, I think, to the Newark area school district. Now, some people, the cynics say he donated it around the time that the movie came out because he was trying to bolster his own image. I don't care how much money you have. $1 billion is a lot of money, okay? And he gave $1 billion, and you cannot take that away from him. And I also read factually he wanted to do it anonymously. He wanted to make it an anonymous donation, but his attorneys and the mayor of Newark convinced him not to make it anonymous, okay? And he made it to that school district because it was one of the worst and poorest in the country. So this is a kid, a young man now with a redeeming feature. He's got a redeeming feature. You wouldn't know it from the movie. Now, granted, it happened after the movie, the contribution to the Newark School District, after the making of the movie, almost in conjunction with the release of the movie. But still, there were aspects of him that could have been portrayed differently in the movie. But again, the filmmakers went to the lowest common denominator, which is sex, violence, you know, without a redeeming feature. There it was. And so that was my problem with them. They didn't think enough of you when they made the movie. They didn't think enough of you to think that you would like to know the truth, the good, the bad, and the ugly. They didn't think that. They decided you still only want to know the bad and the ugly. And that's not what we do here at An Hour of Gold. It's certainly not what I do here at An Hour of Gold. And it's actually not what we do, because Debbie's my personal assistant and Pat works the board, and none of us do the good, the bad, and the ugly here at An Hour of Gold. We all do the best, the brightest. How do we shine the light in the most positive way? And how do we bring to you every Tuesday morning between 10 and 11 inspiration, motivation, and mirror for you your highest self? I'm going to be back after break, and we're going to continue to talk about Social Network and the Winklevoss brothers, and also move on to the president standing in the polls, and as well as Congress standing in the polls. Take a break. WNJC 1360 AM. Your call's welcome at 856-227-1360. Be right back.
Believer.
Welcome back. An Hour of Gold here at WNJC, 1360 AM. Your calls, welcome at 856-227-1360, or, of course, listen on the web at carolwithanegold.com. Before I get back to our subject for today, I just want to take a moment and remind you about my book, The Lightworker's Handbook. It was just released in the last couple of weeks. It's available off my website at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com as well. A Lightworker's Handbook, a spiritual guide to eliminating fear, is a little pocket handbook you can keep with you, and it reminds you of who you are, what your mission is, why you're here now, so that you can focus in on your purpose and your particular goals in life in moving us into a world where there's more peace and harmony. And in the back of the book, I love to refer to my English to Spirit Dictionary, which is about 80 or 85 words redefined for the 21st century to help us have a better conversation that's more uplifting and enlightening than the ones we've been having in the past. So please pick up a copy of A Lightworker's Handbook, a spiritual guide to eliminating fear. Reminding you again that my sponsor is Stefano's Italian Restaurant. That's Stefano's Ristorante and Catering in Mount Laurel. Paola Balsamo has been there for 26 years. I just learned, and I've been eating there for several years now, I just learned that the restaurant is gluten-free. This is an astonishing fact, I have to tell you, because I try to be gluten-free, but I've always eaten there not caring because her food is so delicious that I just assumed it was worth cheating and having real pasta with real, you know, real wheat semolina base. I was completely shocked to find out just recently that it's all gluten-free. That's how good the food is. You have no idea that it's gluten-free pasta. Whether you want pizza for your four-year-old or you want a gourmet entree for yourself, Stefano's Italian Ristorante and Catering in Mount Laurel is where you want to be. Mention An Hour of Gold and receive 10% off your bill. And enjoy that meal. I'm a little jealous. And I think we're just going to, let's take a caller. Good morning.
Good morning. And you'll have to forgive me because I'm ready to cry in a wonderful way. I live in Philadelphia. The static is absolutely horrible. Your positive energy, your high vibration has come through so beautifully. I've been feeling horrible for the past couple of days, very down, very depressed. I'm a light worker. I feel people's energy. And unfortunately, I felt so much energy the past number of weeks that it's really knocked me down. And you have just lifted me so beautifully. I have to thank you from the bottom of my heart. You're even making me cry. And I want to know when you're going to be on TV. You should be on Oprah. You should be on Glenn Beck. You should have your own show. You're amazing. And you have so much to say, so much positive information.
Well,
the whole world needs to hear you, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I just wanted to add to your uplifting morning over there in Philadelphia that please remember that tears are your soul laughing. And so when we cry and we think that we are in pain, what's really happening is we're lightening the load on our soul. So after you cry, your soul always is lighter. It feels energized and ready to go, which is why most of us know that after we cry, we say, oh, I felt better. I had a good cry. Those tears coming out today, you're making your soul very happy this morning. And I want to thank you for sharing your experience with us here at An Hour of Gold.
Thank you. May I add one more thing? That I have been in horrible body pain the past couple days. And just listening to you, as magical and miraculous as it sounds, my body has lightened up. And I thank you. I even got on the scale just now and lost 2 pounds.
Well, that's another show, and we'll want you to call back in and definitely share that secret with
us. I'm very excited. Keep speaking so I can lose 40 pounds.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, well, those are they're the kind of messages that I love that make what I do worthwhile. And it's possible for everyone out there to see the best in what's going on and understand that when you do see the best and when you look at things from a positive perspective, when you even look at the worst possible stories from a positive perspective and you take away that seed of what did I learn here and how do I make it work for me, that the outcome is always a better world. And that's the goal of An Hour of Gold. So I'm going to just go back right now to the last phase of discussing social network, and that is the lawsuit that the Winklevosses, served on Mark Zuckerberg. They sued him for compensation, for restitution, for him having appropriated their idea, which was the foundation for the platform on which he built Facebook. And they wound up settling that case, and the settlement of that case is actually in the movie. They wound up settling that case. The Winklevosses got $65 million in settlement. They got $25,000 in cash and the remainder in stock in Facebook that was as yet valued as of the time of the settlement. But as part of the negotiated settlement, they put a par value on the shares of, I think, $35 a share. Now, how could I was annoyed at Mark Zuckerberg, but we found the high meaning there. We found the highest message there, which is that you bring ethics to business, that you don't get where you're going stepping on someone else's back. And if you do, you make compensation, you make restitution, you learn from it, and you never, ever do it again. You never, ever do it again. That's the message. That's how we change the world. We change the world by learning from our mistakes and never committing them again so that we don't fit the definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Then I got annoyed at the filmmakers because they had to dumb down and dirty down the movie so that it would appeal to a mass audience instead of believing in the best of us and thinking that we would want to know the truth and be inspired by the good parts of the story. And so now we come to the Winklevosses. Well, as fate would have it, I wrote a blog on Sunday after watching the movie on Saturday night, and that blog, available on my website at carolgold.com, is called Zuckerberg's Missing Conscience. But then I wrote a second blog yesterday called Social Network 2, which was a follow-up to the first blog. And the second blog was the feelings that I just shared with you about the filmmakers. Well, yesterday afternoon, a decision came down from a federal court. A federal panel of judges heard the Winklevosses case, which they turned around. They took an appeal from the lower court decision granting them the settlement was $65 million. The Winklevosses sued for more. They wanted to undo the deal. They wanted to go back and revisit the deal because they claimed that they were misled in the valuation of the shares at the time that they put the par value on the shares. So they sued, and the district court ruled that they could not open that settlement up. So they took an appeal from the district court to a panel of federal judges, and the case was heard in federal court, and the decision came down late yesterday afternoon. And the decision is that they cannot open that case up, that they cannot open up the settlement. They upheld the district court's ruling that the case is resolved, the settlement stands. Now, when $65 million isn't enough, something's really wrong here, okay? They had nothing. They trusted in someone, he stole their idea, and they had nothing. And from nothing, they managed to extract $65 million. Now, I don't know about you, but if tomorrow morning I woke up with $65 million, it would be enough. But we live in a world where more is never enough, where you always have to have more. And so the Winklevosses weren't content to go from zero to $65 million. They wanted more. And they are emblematic of so much of what's wrong in this country, that we don't even understand how much we have, and therefore we don't appreciate what we have. And so what we have is never enough. We always want more. More money, more fame, more love, more whatever it is, we want more. So how is that happening? Why is that happening? Well, it's happening because we come from a mentality of lack. We think we lack something. You think you lack something, and so you want to go outside yourself and get it. And if there's a secret in the universe, and I don't believe there is, by the way, I was very offended by The Secret, the book that was out and the CD and the DVD. It drove me nuts because there are no secrets. Everything's available for anybody who wants to know. There's no pass key into any magic golden door where one person gets to find out something nobody else gets to find out. It doesn't happen that way. It's all available. It's all out there. It's all energy. It's all being transmitted on a multitude of frequencies. And if you know how to tune it in, you get what you get. You get all the information you want. But the trick is that the tuner is inside of you. The tuner is inside of you. Everything you need to know to get through life successfully is inside of you. It was programmed in you when you were created because you are an aspect of Source. You are an aspect of Creator. And as an aspect, you have in you all of the qualities, albeit on a miniaturized scale, you have all of the qualities that are in that source out of which you are created. You know, if you replicate something, the replication has all the properties of the original thing from which it was replicated. They're just on a smaller scale. And so everything you need to know is inside of you. You don't lack anything. The only thing you can lack is belief that you have everything. It's like a cosmic joke. You don't lack anything unless you think you do. And of course, when you think something, you make it real. So if you think you lack something, you do. You're born with all the tools, all the equipment, everything you need to create your best life. You know, I like to think of it as we all have our own portion. No one has the whole pie, but we all have our own portion. And the key is to become content with your portion. It doesn't mean your portion is static. It means your potential to actualize the highest self in you is what your portion in life is. You know, I think of the Arab countries. They're so unhappy. They're so angry. They're so desirous of what other countries have. They're sitting on all the wealth. The Arab countries are sitting on all the oil. That's their portion. Little Israel isn't sitting on the oil. Little Israel is sitting on a lot of desert that they've turned into something kind of amazing. But all the Arab countries around them have their portion, and their portion is the wealth of the world, and it's not enough. They want the little country that has no oil, that hardly has any water, but for technological wonder and the ability to create and drive and bring in water where there is none, or to plant and make orchards and vegetables and productivity out of sand. They want that peace because they're not happy with their portion. It's so important that we look at our own portions and say, okay, what's my portion now? What do I do with my portion? How do I use my portion to make the world a better place? Not how do I get what I don't have, because what you don't have for a reason. It's not yours. Everything that's yours is in your life at this moment. Something new may be in your life tomorrow, but if it's not in your life today, it's not yours. What's in your life today is everything that's yours. Make the best of it. Use it for the highest good. Use it for yourself to enrich yourself and others. But remember, there are certain rules that go along with it. And I think there are two rules that go along with it. And I think they're the only two rules that matter. One is, do not do unto anyone else that which you wouldn't want done unto yourself. And the other is, I just went blank. Oh my gosh. You're not allowed to do that. That's like dead air on radio. My brain just went to dead air. There's two rules and I can only remember one of them. Well, the first rule that I just mentioned, do not do unto anyone else that which you would not do unto yourself, is actually the most important. The other one is do no harm. Do no harm. As long as you're not hurting yourself or anyone else, any decision you make, anything you do to advance your own life, to make the quality of your own life better, is perfectly acceptable. The problem with what Mark Zuckerberg did was he stepped on other people. He hurt other people in the manner in which he tried to actualize his portion. His portion is technological genius, but he didn't follow the two rules, which is do not do unto anyone else that which you would not want done unto yourself. The other rule being do no harm. Do no harm. So there's a lot of instruction and a lot of importance in social network. It's just not what the filmmakers had in mind. It's what I have in mind. It's what we do here at An Hour of Gold, which is make sure that we find the highest message, inspire, and motivate every single person within the sound of my voice to be the best you can be on any given day, because as you change, so do you change the world. And why is it so important that you get it right? Why does it matter what you do? Well, just as there are no more secrets, there also are no more experts. There aren't any more experts. You're the expert. We're moving into a time when every single person will be able to access inner guidance and wisdom, whether it's heal your body or increase your income or achieve any goal you seek. You're going to be able to source within, as between you and the ultimate source. You're going to have a direct connection going forward. The experts haven't gotten it right so far. Look around. All the people who know how to run the economy, hello? All the people who know how to run the government, hello? I don't see any remarkable solutions showing up to change the quality of your life or mine. And that's because there aren't any experts anymore. We've been relying on people outside of ourselves so we didn't have to take responsibility for making the tough decisions. And now we're going to make them ourselves, which is why the president's popularity rating, based on a Rasmussen poll this week, Rasmussen being a national pollster who collects public data, Rasmussen came out this week and said that this president has the lowest approval rating he's ever had in his presidency in this week's polling. Only 44% approve of his overall performance, and only 55%, I'm sorry, 44% approve and 55% disapprove. 39% strongly disapprove. Only 28% of the people polled share Obama's political views. To me, that's the most shocking statistic. He's our political leader, and only 28% of us share his political views. What's wrong with this picture? And he's running for re-election. Okay? I don't want you to guess whether I'm a Republican, a Democrat, a Libertarian, a Communist, a Socialist. I don't care about that. I don't want you to try to figure that out. I don't come here with a perspective other than the highest good for all concern. That's my perspective. Well, if 28% of us is all that agree with our leader, the rest of us either need to move somewhere else or we need a new leader. And I think it's easier to get a new leader than it is for 60-some percent of us to pick up and relocate. So I guess we get to do that in 2012, and hopefully we will. Congress has a more disturbing approval rating. In February, Harvard and Stanford law professor Lawrence Lessig spoke, and in his speech he said that only 11% of the American people have confidence in Congress, 11%. Now, he spoke it, but he was quoting a Gallup poll in February of this year, 11%. Lessig raised a really telling comparison. At the time of the Revolutionary War, our Revolutionary War, folks, at the time of the Revolutionary War, between 15 and 20% of the American colonists were loyal to King George. There were more colonists loyal to King George than there are people in this country who have confidence in our current Congress. That's kind of disturbing, okay? And that led to a Revolutionary War. Where are we headed if this is what we think of our leaders, if this is the confidence we have in them? I will tell you that in place of revolution, I believe in evolution. In conscious evolution. To me, revolution means one thing. It means to go around the track again, to re-evolve, to revolute, to turn again, to revolute is to go around the same track again. Not interested, been there, done that. I want to evolve. I want us as a nation, consciously, politically, economically, to evolve. Socially, to evolve, most important socially, because the reason we're in the mess we're in is because the technology outpaced the social development. And the best example I can give you is Facebook. The best example I can give you is the story of Mark Zuckerberg. The technology outpaced the social evolution. He's a technological genius. He used it and he applied it without a conscience. That's where we've come to. And that's the fork in the road we stand at now. And that's why it's so critical that we awaken, that we wake up and each take personal responsibility for every decision you make every single day, even if it's at the supermarket. I use this example all the time. But if somebody gives you too much change, give it back. Don't think you scored an extra $5. It doesn't work that way. That money will do nothing for you. Money has no value, only that which you give it. And it isn't the value based on a gold standard either. It's the value of the ethics that you bring to the money. It only has the value that you bring to it, how you use it. If you steal $5 knowingly because someone handed you the wrong change and you take that money, you start a ripple effect that ends in crooked politicians who do not honor what it is you sent them to Congress for. It starts with you in the supermarket. It starts with you when you take a ream of paper from your company and you leave the office with it and it's not yours. It belongs to the company. It starts there. That's how we get the leaders we have. When we change the way we take responsibility for our everyday decisions, cream rises to the top. That's how it works. We will get the leaders we deserve when we deserve them, and we no longer tolerate, not in them, but in ourselves, behavior that is less than our highest good. Any final thoughts? 856-227-1360 here at WNJC, 1360 AM. You know, real quick story before I close today. I noticed this morning on the internet, there's an article about J. Crew. The president of J. Crew, a woman, Lyons, I think her name is Samantha Lyons. Lyons is her last name. I can't think of her first name. She put out an ad recently for J. Crew, and the ad is her son, and she's painting his toenails hot pink with the new Essie color. Essie is the, I said son. I didn't mean daughter, everybody. I said son, and I meant it. She's painting her son's toenails in the ad. He's about, 8 or 9 years old in the ad. She's painting the new Essie color. J. Crew owns Essie, the nail polish company, and they came out with a new neon pink, it's called. And she's using this color. He's in the ad, and she's painting his toenails as part of the ad. There's a lot of backlash over this ad because putting this hot pink, there's a lot of complaining that it's supporting the gender neutral aspect of looking at male and female and making everybody gender neutral, and hot pink on this little boy. And that seems to be the big problem in the news this morning, is the hot pink color on this little boy. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, folks, but I had a whole issue with the nail polish on the boy's toes, even if it's purple or black. I'm not sure why the color is the issue. The real problem is painting his nails. And the other problem is using her son at an age when he doesn't have a say. Maybe at 16 or 20 or 40, he won't want that picture memorialized of himself getting hot pink nail polish at age 8. And what does that do to him? And we're always complaining about politicians who use their children and put their children into public life. I'm not sure it's any different if you're the president of a national company a global company, and you use your own child, however happy he may appear to be in the moment, as a way to market your product. I think it crosses a line. I think it blurs ethics and values and morals. And I think it's a great way for us to see how easy it is to slip down that slippery slope when you're not responsible and thoughtful about your every action. You know, I stopped letting my daughter go into Abercrombie and Finch a long time ago because when they started having nude ads with teenagers, they lost me, okay? I get to vote every day with my pocketbook. I don't need to vote every 4 years for president. I voted Abercrombie and Finch out. And I'll vote Essie out for the same reason. And by the way, I use Essie nail polish. But I don't anymore. So, that's where it all comes back. It all comes back to my experience over the weekend with ethics, values, Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, the filmmakers, the Winklevosses, and finally, thank you, J. Crew, this morning, drove home the point that we need to question our values, question our ethics, look at ourselves, look at our own decisions, and remember what we say here at An Hour of Gold, which is it all matters because there's only one of us. Thanks for joining me this morning. You've been at WNJC 1360 AM, and you've just been listening to An Hour of Gold here with Carol Gold. See you next Tuesday.
Last night I waved goodbye. Now it seems years I'm back in the city where nothing is clear but thoughts of when will I hold took me started a story.